Chapter 8. Rose loved visiting the Casablanca Cafe. She flirted with Maxie Diamond, Bob's old friend from Prohibition days and current business partner. She danced with strangers at the just-open nightclub. "I need you to sign a form, Rosie," Bob had said shortly after their arrival in Cleveland. "What kind of form, Bob?" "Well, ex-cons really aren't supposed to get liquor licenses, but how can I run a club without one?" "I know how to get one, if you sign a form." "Whatever you need, Bob." Bob's form allowed him to list Rose and other family members in a corporation, skirting the law and allowing him to get a liquor license without using his own name. Maxie Diamond had been a criminal since adolescence. "I call him Superman," Bob told Rose. "He's been shot at so many times, but nothing hits him. Seems to bounce right off. Maxie has a special talent for making the police look bad when they can't catch him, or when their arrests don't stick." "They never send him to jail?" asked Rose. "Well, once they threw him in the slammer for 3 years for not paying taxes on alcohol. He used to own cleaning stores. I shouldn't tell you this, but he bombed some of the competition. They never knew it was him," Bob laughed. Rose thought the Casablanca Cafe had class. It served steak and liquor that other nightclubs and restaurants didn't have during these days of rationing. There was always a live band playing in front of a huge parquet dance floor. People with money went there. It wasn't for the average couple out for a night on the town, leaving their humdrum lives and a babysitter watching the kids. No, thought Rose. It's for the city council and the big shots. Sandy, Rose's patient, died from complications of diabetes. While Rose was happy to spend her brother's money on frivolities, she wanted to keep earning money. So she found a new patient, Mr. Frederick, a middle-aged man who was dying of heart disease. His pert little wife cried often. Their three teenage children came and went, seemingly oblivious to their father's imminent fate. A few weeks into her new position, Rose began the day shift and noticed that Mr. Frederick seemed very ill, barely able to lift his head or acknowledge her presence. Rose quickly rang his doctor on the kitchen phone. "Doctor, he had seemed to be doing fairly well and his vital signs were stable, but today he is almost unconscious and his vital signs are declining." She tried to lower her voice to avoid upsetting the wife. The doctor replied in a thick voice, "Just sit with him and give him medicine for his pain, Mrs. Leibowitz. I knew he didn't have much time left. There's not much else we can do. It'll be over soon." "I need a break," said Mrs. Frederick after Rose got off the phone. "It's quiet and the children are in school. I won't be gone long." "Please don't," said Rose. "He seems to be declining rapidly." "Should I not go? I've been up most nights lately with him, even with the night nurse here. I just need to get out. I won't be long," Mrs. Frederick decided. As soon as she left, Rose reassessed her patient, looking at his head, then his face. He seemed relaxed. There was nothing to indicate he'd had a stroke. Then she checked his pulse, respiration, and blood pressure again. She felt his legs for excessive warmth, redness, or swelling that might indicate a blood clot. Finally, she looked at his fingertips and toes for impaired blood flow. Once she was satisfied, she sat down beside the bed, clipboard and papers in her lap. Every hour, she checked Mr. Frederick's vital signs and for indications of pain, but he slept quietly without restlessness. Between these checks, Rose sat by the open window while all was quiet. She'd opened it to let fresh air into the room. It was a still, warm, late summer day. Nothing moved. Even the birds seemed sleepy. Mr. Frederick's respiration started to become shallow and farther apart. His blood pressure dropped, and his pulse was rapid and thready. Knowing that hearing remained long after conscious thought, she said, Mr. Frederick, it's Rose, the nurse. Can you talk to me? He didn't respond. Rose hoped his family would have returned in time to say goodbye. The day progressed slowly. Rose fanned herself with one of her plentiful handkerchiefs. She could feel the sweat trickling between her breasts and down her back. After another hour, a breeze stirred the window curtains. The lace curtains billowed in, then out with the breeze, like someone taking a deep breath and blowing it out. Rose was grateful for the cool air. Then the room became stifling again. She mopped his brow several times. The curtains were still once more. The family had not yet returned. She was becoming more concerned. Another hour passed. Rose turned her head from the window and got up from the chair to check her patient. His eyes were wide open. "Hello," she said, surprised he was awake. "Hello," he croaked in a hoarse voice. "How do you feel?" she asked, as she applied the blood pressure cuff and placed her stethoscope in her ears. He smiled weakly. The blood pressure had risen. His skin color was less pale, and his pulse stronger and more regular. He fell back asleep. Rose dutifully checked his vital signs and conducted her assessments every hour. Her patient was not yet ready to die. Instead, he became stronger, as if the breeze had whispered to him to rejoin the living. Later in the afternoon, when the sun had become a shadow of its former self, his wife and children returned home to see him smiling and talking. Rose gave her report to the night nurse who came on duty in the early evening. They whispered together in the room adjacent to where the patient and his family chatted happily. Rose didn't mention the still air, the breeze, or the billowing curtains, but she knew something uncanny had happened. Natty missed her father. He wrote long letters about books, the operas he'd heard on the radio, and what he saw outside the living room window. When she first started receiving them, the letters were written in block letters with simple language. Yet his letters were always full of vivid imagery, so that Natty felt like she was seeing the opera stage in the costumes. As time went on, he added detail to his descriptions, explaining the stories evoked by the music. He also wrote to suggest books she should read someday. He told her about the books he read at her age, the classics mostly, what was happening at the store, and about his few steady customers and what they bought. "I was surprised when an old lady came in and bought that awful green ceramic clown. Remember that one, Natty? Don't worry, your little elephant is here waiting for you. I talked to your ceramic Indian so he knows you miss him." He made her laugh. He sent her his tattered copy of Huckleberry Finn. She and Abby read it over and over again. To save postage, his letters to Natty were stuffed in the same envelope as his letters to Rose and Abby. Natty felt nourished by his letters. He called once a month to Uncle Bob or Uncle Max's house. The timing didn't always work, and she rarely got to speak to him. The summer passed slowly for Natty. She wished she were home with her father and her friends in Brownsville. Despite her grandma and grandpa's warmth and hospitality, she felt out of place. And because she considered the visit temporary, she couldn't let herself get too attached to the places or the people. School began in September. Natty was in fifth grade and Abby in eighth. On the day before the start of the new school year, after a breakfast of hot cereal and milk, Natty, her sister, and her mother walked to Natty's school to complete the paperwork and introduce her to her new teacher. After that was settled, they walked to Abby's new school. The teachers would give Abby packets of work to do whenever she was traveling. "Too bad, Natty. You have to sit in school all day. I get to see the world." "You're just going around Ohio. That's not the world," said Natty. "It's better than sitting in school all day," said Abby. Natty was secretly pleased to go to school because she liked making new friends, even if she didn't plan to get too attached to them. Maybe the friends she'd met in the park over the summer would be in her class. She didn't say anything to Abby, who would simply make her miserable for being happy. But she was nervous about starting school while her mother and Abby were leaving. She just wasn't going to let Abby know she was nervous. She'd learned enough over the summer to know that Cleveland was not Brooklyn. She loved Cleveland's open spaces with lots of trees and grass so green because of frequent rain, but she missed talking to friends and neighbors through the air shaft or out on the fire escape. She remembered when her father had taken the family to museums. Her mother didn't always go. Natty loved seeing the dinosaurs. Once he took them to a Gilbert and Sullivan play in Central Park. They brought a picnic and had a wonderful day. Cleveland had museums and concerts, but there was no one to take them or anyone who seemed to have any interest. She was surprised that her mother's family didn't read or care about the things her father did. Now Natty walked alone to the new school. She wore a new dress her mother bought for her on a day off. Natty's new precious black Mary Jane shoes felt tight and uncomfortable, but they looked pretty. That morning, her mother had hugged and kissed Natty goodbye, telling her she and Abby would return in a few weeks and that Natty would be fine. She had given her a nickel to buy lunch. Natty wondered what she'd do on the other days. "You'll be staying with Uncle Bob and Aunt Sadie while we're gone, Natty," her mother had said while Natty ate her breakfast. "Why can't I stay here?" "There's no one to stay here with you." "I could go home and stay with Daddy. Please, Mother, can I?" "Daddy has to work and you need to go to school. Go now, Aunt Sadie will come by and get you after school. You can come home and pack before you go to her house." It was no time for more arguing. Natty guessed her mother planned it that way. The teacher was kind, giving her a desk near the front. Natty was reassured by her smile. She soon found school to be more fun than she'd imagined. The kids called her Brooklyn. It was the first nickname she'd ever had and had her Brooklyn accent to thank for it. A few Irish boys teased her about her dark skin and her Brooklyn accent. She tried to ignore them. Natty didn't like living with Uncle Bob and Aunt Sadie. They mostly ignored her as they did their own kids. The one nice thing was their big house, big enough to get lost in. Natty had a room of her own. After school, she often made up fantasy games, dressing up in Aunt Sadie's discarded gowns. Occasionally, she was allowed to bring a friend home, but she felt awkward in the unfamiliar house. Her mother and Abby returned in October. They all went back to the apartment and Abby went to school. Natty missed being in a bed of her own and sleeping all night, but by January, her mother and Abby were gone again to see other specialists on Laura's list. They left right after Natty's 11th birthday. Her mother had given her a new white blouse with a Peter Pan collar. Aunt Sylvia made a vanilla birthday cake with red icing and hosted a party with the whole family. But not Daddy, Natty thought. When it was time to make a wish, she whispered, "I wish I could go home." Then she blew out the candles. This time, Uncle Bob and Uncle Max moved Natty to her grandparents' apartment. She was glad to be away from Uncle Bob and Aunt Sadie. She saw him act one way around Natty's mother and another way around his own wife. He bossed Aunt Sadie around like a maid. They argued often, and Natty didn't like hearing arguments. They made her think of how unhappy her parents seemed when they were together. The year 1944 was passing quickly, though she had to readjust each time her mother and Abby reappeared and listen to her mother complain about the doctors who knew nothing. Her mother's neglect and her father's absence made Natty feel miserable and lonely. Natty visited Uncle Izzy and Aunt Gladys and went to the park near their house. They often listened to the radio together in the evening. She heard Uncle Izzy and Aunt Gladys talk about the D-Day invasion. It sounded like the war was nearing its end. They and her grandparents tried to keep her from feeling sad and lonely. They liked to sing with her to "It Had to Be You" and "Don't Fence Me In," although they didn't always understand the words. Fortunately, Natty was a naturally cheerful person who didn't tend to stay sad for long. Still, she felt like she was in limbo, neither here nor there, and wondered where she belonged. Grandma and Grandpa let her put some posters on the wall near where she slept in a small back room that also stored unused fabric and sewing supplies. They told Abby she could put posters up there, too. She could see the pictures whenever she was home. They decided to cut out magazine pictures of their favorite movie stars. Abby had Errol Flynn, and Natty had Montgomery Clift. Monty Clift was Natty's favorite because one day when she was at her Uncle Izzy and Aunt Gladys's house, there was a phone call. Aunt Gladys was traveling. Uncle Izzy was in his home studio. Natty had just put down her book when the phone rang. "Hello," she answered. "Hello," she answered. "Firestone residence. Who am I speaking to, please?" A man's deep voice answered. "Hello, is Gladys there?" "I'm sorry, she can't come to the phone right now. Who shall I say is calling?" "That's okay. Please tell her Monty called. Maybe she can call me back." Natty just about died. She didn't respond. She couldn't. She just placed the phone in its cradle and ran to get her magazines to find a picture of Monty. Abby said he was a good choice, a good match for Errol Flynn. Their two crushes could stare at each other across the room and keep each other company during the day. They'd also be surrounded by beautiful women. Abby said she liked Judy Garland because of her singing voice, and Katharine Hepburn because she wore pants. Natty put up pictures of the dark-haired beauties because she wanted to be like them. Jane Russell, Elizabeth Taylor, and Vivian Leigh. A passion for movie stars was one thing Natty and Abby had in common. They could gossip like normal young girls until Natty recognized the signs, just before Abby lost control. Sometimes they talked about hairstyles and how they longed to wear makeup. One minute, Abby would be chattering happily. The next, she'd be sobbing uncontrollably. When this happened, Natty felt sorry for her sister and left her alone to gather herself.